Welcome to Nightlife, the podcast.
Blanche Doubleshank hardly needs an introduction. An acclaimed journalist, award-winning author, and the second wife of Prime Minister Bob Hawke. Author Derek Riley had the very enviable task of lunching with Blanche every Friday for a year to compile stories for his latest work, Fridays with Blanche. You could perhaps call it a follow-on from his work Wednesdays with Bob. From carrying a 10-inch bladed knife to ward off men through Rome, Parisian love affairs, and to revealing the final hours of Bob Hawke's life, nothing is off limits, and the reader is all the better for it. Blanche Doubleshank and Derek Riley, welcome to Nightlife.
Thank you, James.
Thank you, James.
Now, first, correct me if I'm wrong, but I just love the relationship that you two seem to have created over the year of doing this book. But Blanche, you weren't convinced to be involved. Tell me how you and Derek first met all those years ago and how he convinced you to open up to him.
Well, this whole thing is really the brainchild of our mutual literary agent, Jeanne Rickman. And she got the idea of, or maybe Derek got the idea of doing a book on Bob. And Jeanne said, oh, you'll have to persuade Blanche first. And so we met for lunch, the three of us, and I very much took to Derek and said yes, and it went ahead. He did the book with Bob, and I got to know him a bit when he'd be coming to the house all the time to talk to Bob. Mm-hmm. And then similarly this time, I refused to write my own memoir or autobiography, and she persuaded me to let Derek do it. And we were buddies, and it's just continued like that.
What was it about Derek that made you go, he's the one? He's quite charming, isn't he?
He's very charming. He's very charming and full of bullshit.
We had a lot of fun.
Okay. Well, look, I'm glad that this relationship happened, because I also just love the way that you were able to just create such incredible moments in this book, Derek, that really make you feel like you're there. We'll get to that in a moment. And we'll get to your greatest love later, Blanche. But I absolutely love the stories of the great lovers in your life, from Indonesia to Paris to the juggling that you managed at times. What was it like for you to recount those times and live in the past in those moments in the book? Because you have had a lot of fun.
Yes, I've had a lot of fun. And Derek's easy to talk to and encouraged me to be indiscreet. So I was. It was just as simple as that, really.
But she wasn't completely indiscreet. There was a bit of discretion involved in a few lovers. A few lovers not included in the book.
Yeah. How many times were their stories told and then Blanche has gone, oh, actually, maybe keep that one out?
Not many.
Okay.
She's very candid, but there was a couple that would really knock your socks off, so we couldn't tell those, because she knew the response from, I guess, certain members of the press would be wildly unfavorable and wouldn't really understand the context yeah, in which they were taken.
Well, there's also a couple of moments in the book where stories are told but names aren't mentioned, and my gosh, that's spicy enough.
Yeah, well, that's purely for legal purposes.
Yeah, I understood that. Yeah.
Blanche is happy to name names, but the lawyers were very, very worried.
Yeah, please don't name them here either, please.
We won't name the rapist, and we won't name the recipient of the money from 60 Minutes.
Yeah, okay, or the politician.
Or the politician.
That people keep calling about, yeah, okay.
Ah, yes, senior Labor figure.
Yeah. But you had a lot of fun. It was the 60s and the 70s, Blanche. What kind of a time was that for you, looking back, to think that now, well, things are different, aren't they?
Yes. Well, it was genuinely a time of liberation after the oppressiveness of the 40s, obviously, during the war. And in the post-war period, women, the stay home and populate was taken very seriously, and women were not allowed to do much in terms of careers. And suddenly along came sexual liberation and the concept that a woman could do anything that didn't require male genitals.
Must have been freeing.
It was, yes. And the other thing that I think is important to remember, it was before the great fear of sexually transmitted diseases. There weren't any. Well, of course, gonorrhea and syphilis have existed for centuries, millennia. But for the normal population, that was not an issue at all. Suddenly there was genuine sexual freedom, free of the fear of pregnancy of women, and free of the fear of sexual diseases, which came in the, I guess, late 70s was the start of, what's it called?
HIV?
No, HIV was 82.
Yeah, it was late 80s, yeah. Yeah, mid-80s, yeah.
I've forgotten the name of it.
Chlamydia?
No, gonorrhea. I don't know. There might have been
something.
Yeah.
Derek, you got to talk to some incredible people for this book. The lunch with Graham Richardson was an absolute page turner. How you described Tony Pratt was absolutely divine, and Miriam Margolyes coming by was an absolute highlight for me. How did you get these people involved? Was there much arm twisting going about? And I think, if I remember right, Tony was just happened to be a coincidence, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, well, everyone says yes to Blanche, so I wanted to have lunch with Richo, because I've always wanted to meet Richo, because he's a larger than life figure, and I'd done the book on Bob, and I didn't speak to Richo because they weren't on great terms at the time. And so, you know, Blanche just called him up, and it was the first time, I believe, that Blanche had really had a sort of a one-on-one-ish lunch with Richo, and they got on beautifully, and you know, Richo was, you know, fulsome in his praise, and it was classic Richo, like their former police commissioner stops over and all these things. It's epic. And as far as Miriam goes, that was a gift from the heavens. You know, she's just a dialer quote, just came in just banging off quotes the minute she got in. One minute we're talking about Gaza, the next it's blowjobs, the next it's S&M, it's everything. So I was very, very fortunate. It was like, it really was, you know, fishing salmon in a barrel.
Yeah. Classic Miriam in that chapter. I'll bring it up because you've kind of mentioned there, but this unofficial reconciliation dinner with Bob Hawke and Paul Keating, where you invited Miriam Margolyes around, and a French count nonetheless. how did that come about, Blanche?
The count with whom we'd stayed in France at his chateau there was coming to Australia and was going to be our house guest with his – actually, she was his fiancée already, I think. Mm. And so it was obvious I had to put on a dinner for him. And I thought, well, how am I going to do this in a way that's going to be impressive? And I thought, it was a great opportunity to invite Paul and his then partner. And then I had to think of a few other tricks. And I thought having some entertainment would be good. And Miriam happened to be in town and was more than happy to do it. So it just all worked out. I think there were about 12 of us. I had some, I had another quite senior politician. He might have been the state premier. I can't remember.
Things went swimmingly, didn't they?
They went very well. And Paul and Bob snuck off together down to the boat shed. We had a thing called an inclinator because our house was built on a hill and it was sort of a goat. Well, it was very, very steep decline down to the water. And they left with a bottle of red wine or it might have even been brandy. Yeah, anyway, whatever they left with, they came back and there was nothing in it and there was plenty in them.
And, you know, the relationship was mended, right?
Yes, yes, it was. It was. It was very heartwarming. And then, Of course, when Bob was dying, which wasn't too much longer after that, Paul came round and he was, I think he came round twice and I went away and left them to it so they could just talk to each other. And then, of course, he spoke very well at Bob's funeral, estate memorial service.
Yeah. You're on Nightlife on ABC Radio. I'm James Findlay. With you is Blanche Doubleshay and Derek Riley. Derek Riley's written a new book, Fridays with Blanche. It came out this week. And nothing's off limits. And in just a moment, you'll get more of an idea of why that's the case.
The Assembly.
What would your dying wish be?
Endgame with Tony Armstrong, Annabelle Crabb's Civic Duty, and I Was what? Actually There.
The smoke itself was igniting.
All these and more. Always free, always compelling. ABC iView. Nightlife with James Finlay. This is ABC Radio.
And tonight, Blanche Doubleshay and Derek Riley are with you. Derek Riley's got a brand new book out, Fridays with Blanche, where he dined with Blanche every Friday for a year to put this book together. As I mentioned, nothing's off limits. Blanche, I love how candid you are about your sex life. Still, in your 80s, you talk about how you've dipped your toe back in the last couple of years. What frees you to be so open?
Well, I've never thought that sex was bad or nasty. In fact, I had the opposite idea as when I was growing up. It was forbidden, but just the same way that driving a car was forbidden. You had to be a certain age. And but it was a very desirable thing to be able to do as soon as you got to that age. So that's been my attitude all along. I honestly have had a positive attitude towards sex my whole life.
But we can tell from the stories, I think.
And I find it really weird that people still carry on as if, like, four-year-olds talking about that sex is along with poos and wees. I mean, that sort of attitude towards it.
Well, I'm very childlike, James, so I just milked every second, loved every second of it.
I can tell. And the moment where, Blanche, you're reading out passages from your book that came out earlier this year, and which were quite erotic, and then you happen to have the recorder out, was certainly a moment that I chuckled quite loudly.
Yes, well, he tricked me again. He said to me, this is the novel I'd written called The Bunny Club, and he said it hasn't got enough sex in it. So I wrote that scene and put it in, and he said, oh, read it to me. And I read it and had no idea he was recording it, the swine. The good-looking swine.
It's a great party trick, James, to pull out the recording and just to go, check out this is Blanche talking to me.
Thanks.
Have you recorded an audiobook of that book, Blanche?
No.
No, okay. And that is exclusive content then.
Yes, it is. an actress has, an actor, a female actor has done the audiobook.
How important is it for you and women to explore this sexual side of life still in your 80s?
Well, it's obviously a very individual thing and it's dependent on many factors, but I think if you're still up for it, go for it.
Nothing like a bit of extra spice to life by the sounds, Blanche.
Yeah, yeah.
The book shows that the people close to you, Blanche, people who were in your life, people who were out of your life and then back in your life, because there's a couple of those too, they have such admiration for you. Your good friend Sue Kirby, I want to point out a passage or like a quote that she says here, because I thought this was quite poignant. I think Sue says it's very important to like your journey around spirituality is very important to you. She's a very complicated person. There are so many sides to her. She's not what she appears. She's underrated. People think that she's a blonde bimbo Barbie doll. They don't recognize her intelligence. They don't recognize that she's good company. She's fun. She's got a spiritual side. It doesn't gel for people. That's all they see is this woman who got Bob away from Hazel and blame her for it. How tough was it to have the public turn against you when they didn't know you at all?
Look, I was madly in love with Bob at the time, as he was with me. And as I'd never been dependent on the opinions of the public up until then, it didn't really matter to me that they disliked me. I didn't like getting hate mail and anonymous letters put into our postbox written in red ink saying, "We'll kill you, you Jew-loving bitch," and things like that. I didn't enjoy that. And sometimes I got to the stage where I used to be frightened about opening the letterbox. But as for people not disapproving of me, I figured that was their problem. They were acting in prejudice and ignorance and didn't know the circumstances. And so there it was. And I was madly in love with Bob. And really, if you've very in love with somebody, that love so enhances your life and your attitude, and that negativity doesn't have much chance of getting a foothold.
I want to get into that a little bit more, but on that quote from Sue Derrick, it's such... How did you get that out of Sue? Because what led you down that path? Because it was such a beautiful friendship that you were able to unearth there.
One of the main reasons, or the main reason why I wanted to write the book was Blanche is wildly underrated. You know, her work, her book on Jakarta, Monkeys in the Dark, and Refugees in Malaysia, you know, Turtle Beach, and then the biography on Bob that, you know, convinced the Labor Party that was fit to lead. She was so underrated. And then when the literary public knew her from her books, but then the greater public, the Daily Telegraph reading public, just got to know her as the avatar of the blonde, sexy woman stealing people's husbands. And it just felt wildly unfair. And I'd read her entire body of work when I did the Bob book. And just the way she spoke at the funeral and, everything I've read about her, she just seemed like her life was much greater than the life that came to define her. That was Bob's life.
And then so when you were speaking to the people that knew Blanche the most, I guess it just came out quite easily by the sounds.
Yeah, well, they love her. You know, everyone who knows her, they love her because she's smart, she's funny, she's witty. You know, she's a great observer. Her opinions are, I guess, malleable. Or if there's evidence to suggest thinking another way, she's not afraid to shift from opinion. So it's one of those rare intelligent peoples that can shift when she's presented with greater evidence. So yeah, so Sue just couldn't wait to talk about Blanche and how much she loved her. And same with Miriam. Miriam adores her and Graham and Sue Peters Hawk, who wasn't the hugest fan of Blanche's when she rolled up to Bob's house in 1976.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because that conversation, well, it could have gone badly, Derek. But you got it back on track. Tell me about what it was like speaking to Sue.
Yeah. Well, I was a little bit starstruck because I'd always seen her on the TV when I was a kid. So it was good to meet. And she looks so much like a dad and kind of walks like a dad, has the same gait. And then, you know, I knew that I couldn't, she didn't want to speak too candidly. But
yeah, because you were walking a fine line at times.
Yeah, it's a very, very fine line, and I think she straddled it pretty well. I think she straddled it better than me. Like I was asking anything, but she was cool. I mean, she was open about the day when Bob left Hazel in the Northbridge house, and you know she helped him out of bed and put him in the spa and got him dressed and to go live with Blanche, and he was weeping. Yeah, that was a very candid, raw story. And speaking about how she struggled a bit with Blanche initially in the 90s, and then came around when, particularly after she saw the way Blanche nursed Bob in his final years, and saw that demonstration of love that it was beyond anything that she might have thought, I guess.
Yeah, and when she saw how happy Bob was and Blanche were, it kind of changed the way that she looked at it.
Oh, look, you're right on the money there, James. But really early on in the relationship, before Sue and I got to know each other at all, we went to visit her in hospital. She'd broken a leg on a holiday, and she said, you've made Dad so happy. And she was really happy on that account. Oh. She was very sensitive to – she is very sensitive to people's feelings and mood. So I was thrilled with that, and then things between us went south for a while, and it was dynamic relationship, if I can put it that way.
Yeah.
But it's very affectionate now.
I think there's something in that, how there are people that come in and out of your life, but which I guess can happen to many people, but it seems that, people are always drawn back, which I think, says a lot in itself, Blanche. Derek, maybe you could reflect on that, because I think that says a lot about Blanche's, attraction.
Yeah, of course. And also, Blanche had a, speaking of dynamic, she had a dynamic life with Bob, particularly when he was doing business in China. So the relationship with Sue, for example, they didn't really see each other much for years. Blanche is off doing her thing. Sue's off doing her thing. She's an academic. And so, you go out of people's orbits for a while, and you're gradually attracted back to each other. And it's like, you've never left. It might be 20, 30, 40 years, but it's still the same people, and that love's still there.
Yeah. I do love the quote that Sue gave you, that Blanche was never nasty, always naughty.
Outstandingly naughty. and it's funny because Sue's 81 or 82, whatever, but you can tell there's still an outstandingly naughtiness in there. But you just want to be transported back to 1975 and the chaotic Whitlam government, and everyone's living in Urambi and in Canberra and having these wild parties and everything.
and I think it's kind of reflected in the book, but at times, just not as fun anymore, Blanche. Have people got boring?
Yes. And times are not as fun. But listen, the whole world is not as fun. Well, the whole of the Western world. It might, I don't know about how things are in India and China and so forth. They might, because I haven't been there recently. They might be having a great time, but the world is in a tumultuous period. We're moving from one state of being into a new one, and we don't know what that new one is. And so we're just in the turmoil at the moment.
Mm. You're on ABC Radio. I'm James Findlay. This is Nightlife, and with you is Blanche Doubleshay and Derek Riley. Derek's new book, Fridays with Blanche, has just come out this week, where Derek spends, a year catching up with Blanche on Fridays and put together this book of stories. Let's talk about a bit of time-changing because I love that you say in the book, Blanche, that people get hurt in matters of the heart, but it's not a crime against humanity. Do you think society has changed? Are people more forgiving to separations and relationships now, do you think?
Oh, gosh. Well, people are much more prudish than they used to be in the 60s and 70s. Mm. And 80s and 90s. there is certainly a great deal more reserve. There's a lot more reserved behaviour. And on the other side, there's this huge explosion of pornography, which is disastrous for relationships. And I think it's particularly disastrous for men. I think it's worse for them because it's difficult enough for men to deal with women anyway, and pornography's just made it all that much more confusing, made women that much more confusing for them, and well, so they've retreated.
Unrealistic expectations, right?
Yes, because women are more complex than men. And that's hard for blokes to cope with. And, oh, well, I think I'm just talking nonsense anyway.
I think you're making good sense.
Derek, you're entranced. I'm always entranced when you speak.
Listen to him. He's so good looking, James.
I can tell from the picture in the book.
Oh, no, that's a dreadful picture. I don't know why I chose that.
That's my passport photo.
Oh, yeah.
That's your passport photo. That's a good
I'm not surprised. It's horrendous. He really is beautiful.
I know that you mentioned that you didn't really care about what the public thought of you, Blanche, but, you know, you did get a brunt of opinions. Do you think the public forgives you now? Because
I do. Because people keep on coming up to me in the street and telling me, women in particular, and saying, I admire you so much. I don't ask them for why.
You know.
Why look a gift horse in the mouth? It's very nice, but people smile at me all the time, and when I'm out in public, I tend not to, because I'm a bit short-sighted, actually, I tend not to see it, but people I'm with are saying, oh, all those people over there are looking at you, and that woman smiling, and that one smiling, and they really want to come over and ask for a photograph, and that sort of thing goes on the whole time.
What does it mean to you that the public have really turned a corner?
Well, as I said, because I didn't depend upon the public opinion in the first place for my sense of self-worth, I don't depend upon it now. It was much tougher for Bob because his whole life had really been very much dependent on what the public thought of him, and because he was born to be a public figure, and so when the public turned against me, they also to a degree turned against him, and that for him was very hurtful.
Yeah,
in a way that it wasn't hurtful for me. It was just kind of irrelevant.
Well,
except for the terrible letters in the letterbox.
Yeah,
which they were so bad, we used to have to give them the federal police.
Oof, not a good.
We had a huge thick file of them.
So, what, the police would open them before they got to you?
No, we'd have a look. Well, Bob's secretary would have a look at them, Jill Saunders, yeah, and would decide, yes, these ones have to go to the police because they're potentially dangerous, and these ones we'll just file with along with the, you know, under hate mail.
Gosh, we're running out of time, but like one thing I really kind of stuck with me, and I know that you've talked a lot over the years about how much you and Bob loved each other, but it was tough. Like the fact that you went back and saw each other, then spent time apart, saw each other, spent time apart. And then even towards the end, you two getting together, as you've described, was still a challenge. Like he wouldn't commit to you. He wouldn't give you what you really wanted or needed, you know. What was it that kept you rather than moving on to other men? Because there were other irons in the fire. What was it that kept you there? Because he didn't really... I feel like there were times where he could have probably tried a little bit harder, Blanche.
Well, I disagree with that. It was a hell of a thing for him because, look, he'd made marriage vows and his father, who was a Congregationalist minister, priest, had married them. And he took that very seriously.
In some respects.
Fidelity in any way seriously from the word go. He was unfaithful, but actually staying together he took seriously,
right?
And so that was really a very difficult decision for him. And he consulted all his male friends, and all of them but one said to him, "You're a lunatic. Just keep her as your girlfriend."
Mm.
And there was one who said to him, "Oh no, you'd be much better off with her." And I love that man forever. but the others just thought he was a lunatic for doing it.
Yeah.
But of course he wasn't, because had he not done it, he would have drunk himself to death.
The amount that you did to change his life and then, you know, on course change the country is it's quite remarkable. Look,
thank you for saying that.
No, you're welcome.
Oh my god, that's my telephone. I beg your pardon.
Do you want to hang that up before we wrap this up?
Yes. Let me find it.
You're on ABC Radio. Yeah, this is live. I'm James Findlay. With you is Blanche Duffelshay and Derek
off.
Riley. No, that's okay. It's all good. Look, I just want to end because you're very spiritual and you talk about how life comes in 7-year phases. So, Blanche, what's next?
Well, on the 16th of May next year, it'll be 7 years since Bob died. And I think for me, that will be a beginning of a new phase.
And we'll see what comes next.
And what that is, I don't know.
Yeah. But that's when the new phase starts, by the sound.
Yes, I believe so.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing what happens after then, Blanche. Look, it's been such a privilege to speak with you both tonight. Thank you so much for your time. The book is an absolute treat to read. It's raw, it's fun, dare I say, it's even horny. I love it so much. Blanche Duffelshay and Derek Riley, thank you so much for your time tonight.
Thank you, James. Thank you. That's very generous of you.
Fridays with Blanche by Derek Riley came out this week and it's out through Allen and Unwin.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.